All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, I'm Jeremy Roenick, and you're watching Nasty Knuckles. You gotta love it.
You're listening to Nasty Knuckles, the Hockey Outlaws podcast, with your host, Derek Nasty Suttermeyer, and former Philadelphia Flyer enforcer Riley Cote, as they go behind the scenes with your favorite NHL players. Time to face off.
All right, welcome back. What's happening, Nasty?
What's up, Rigorilla?
Ready for the holidays?
I think so.
Look like it.
I got my hat on. It's actually Elvis. My lights weren't working. I tried to hang up my Christmas lights, so I wore my Christmas light socks.
I like it. You got your elf shoes, I see.
Yeah, they're pretty much elf shoes. These are my Eagles shoes. I usually wear these if I go to the Eagles game, but okay. I haven't gone this year.
No?
Just a telly. Just a little telsy. Tailgate. Well, to everyone's surprise, you actually showed up for a men's league game. Without equipment. So once again, I saved the day with you. And you donned some Rebels gear.
Yeah.
Actually fit you properly. I think your pants you wear are too big now because you lost so much damn weight since you played.
Yeah.
I think you need to go to a Meadzy.
Probably.
Because that's what you were wearing.
Yeah.
So I'll get you a pair. I'll get you a pair.
Felt right. And...
But just so everyone knows, this is how high maintenance an NHL player, former player in your case, but playing men's league. I have to bring an oven to bake this guy's skates. I'm not playing unless I get new skates and they're baked and ready to roll. No, I actually did bring the oven to do your skates finally because I gave your other pair away, which we talked about before.
Sold my other pairs, got the new ones
in. You got the new ones. You were buzzing. You fell. I thought you broke every bone in your body the way you got up. I never seen, Riles gets hit, boys.
By our own guy.
By our own guy. He gets hit by our own guy. He goes down. Joey. And I see him skating back, not hard. Not even hustling at all, which you always do. So I knew something. I'm thinking, oh man, is it his shoulder? Is it his back? What is it? Comes into the zone. Puck goes from the bottom up to the top to the D. This guy takes a clapper. Riles just skates right to him. Doesn't even you didn't even react. I said the boys on the bench, I would have been jumping 5 feet out of the way. I think you were so mad you were hurt. You just were hit me.
Yeah.
I don't care. At this point, it was kind of funny, but you rebounded. 2 goals, 2 assists, a normal day for you. And men's league, you played pretty good, buddy. You look good in the wheels.
Thank you.
Yeah, well, it could have been the sharpening. Probably more of
the sharpening
that
felt great.
Than
the wheels
anything.
Felt great. Yeah.
Of course, though, fellas, I will say, as one of my best buddies, former former enforcer in the National Hockey League, I get absolutely murdered from behind, right into the boards, right in the numbies. Bro, I thought I broke my wrist. My back's hurting the next day. Coming off a concussion, so I can't even speak because I'm still suffering from that conky.
Yeah.
From a guy that had slew-footed me 3 weeks ago and gave me a conky. I don't think he meant to. I don't want to say he meant to.
Why didn't you do anything about it?
Why didn't you?
Because
I was down on the ice.
He was in the penalty box after that.
We didn't score on the power.
We did not.
I don't think. Actually, maybe we did score. But
hey, Nasty, I got to say, though, you know, made the return, got the gear ready, the blades ready. No jersey.
No jersey. You had to wear Blackie's jersey. Blackie's I hated jersey. To do that to you. Sorry, Blackie. You're my boy. I had to get put the 32.
32
at least
Blackie.
You still had 32 Blackie, right. But I think that might be why you fell.
Probably. That was a hard fall. You know,
It was.
It was the back. It was the shoulder. It was the thigh.
You didn't look well.
I did not feel well. I thought I was going to have to pack her up. Lower back.
Yeah, the old back.
Herniated
when you gave
disc
out that,
popping out again.
False information before checking for charity about your back.
Oh, my God. That was those... reactivated for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, you were reactivated. In all seriousness, fun time. It was a good time. Glad you could show up. Now we got the playoffs. But yep. We don't start for two more weeks because of the holidays. But
body's going to tighten up.
Well, yeah, for
over
sure.
Over the holidays.
But on to real hockey, the Flyers, still rolling.
They're buzzing.
3-0 since last week, since we were together. Shootout win against the Caps. Bobby Brink.
Brinksy poo.
Yeah. Goalie tried to double poke check him, basically, and he just showed some serious patience.
Yeah,
went around
patience.
Him and literally laid it into the net. I do want to mention TJ Oshie's sick goal in the shootout. He's so good at that, but we've known that forever. But a big win, man. Then they go against Detroit. Detroit comes to town. Our boy Ghost.
Yeah.
Play had a really good game. He had a couple chances there in the end, too, when they had pulled the goalie and tried to tie the game up. Our good buddy Alex Lyon was in that. He got hurt. Hopefully he's okay. I'm not sure exactly what was going on there.
Yeah.
But anyway, the Flyers win 1-0. And they go to Jersey and come up with a big OT win.
Yeah, strong effort there.
Paling 2 Gs. The play with him and Beezer. I mean, even TK's play to him was great. But I love give and goes from my days in basketball and soccer and even hockey. I love give and goes. Johnny Stevens used to say, "Nasty, what do we got to do?" And I'd be like, "Give and goes,
give
baby. G and G's."
That was a kind of a wider give and go too,
it
right?
Was,
it wasn't
it
you know
was.
Generally those give and goes in shorter space, smaller spaces.
Seam there.
Yeah,
and,
nice play.
He didn't make any mistake putting that puck in the net. No. Boy, I'll tell you what. But then one of my favorite calls I've ever heard JJ say. In the OT, when your boy Lil Jizzy, I mean, that's a turnover you really don't want to have
in any league.
turns it right over to Owen Tippett, and as JJ said,
OT in OT!
Owen Tippett with overtime goal.
Yeah,
and,
it was big effort.
Yeah,
man.
Just they're buzzing. We've been saying it for a few weeks, but it's fun to watch, man.
Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah, they got something, I say special there. They got the ingredient that you're looking for when you're building a team, right? I mean,
yeah,
they got 100%. The balls, they got the chemistry going, you know, it's, I think.
Well, Torch said they got balls.
Yeah, they got balls, yeah.
But they do, though.
They
really
do, yeah.
They
no, they're finding
balls.
Ways to win games, and they're resilient. And, you know, as a fan, that's exactly what you're looking for. And so all you really care about is just have a little fight and dig in, right? And they're going above and beyond that. They are definitely
I think they're making people believers right now.
Yeah,
and I know there's a lot of season left. And the last thing we want to do is jinx anything because we have done that before.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously it wasn't our fault. But, man, are they playing well? And they're playing hard, and they're hard to play against. We've talked about it week after week now. And you're starting to really kind of believe that they're going to do this, all year and put themselves in a spot. They keep winning like this. You know, you're gaining points. Obviously you want to get as many as you can, but – they're right up top.
Yeah.
I mean, it's and they're fun to watch.
They are, yeah.
They really are fun to watch.
Yeah.
So.
And the consistency's there, you know, like they're not, you know, winning one or two and then dropping one or two.
Right.
Like the consistency's there, the effort's there. I think, you know, early on in the season, the argument would have been, like, can they sustain this?
Well, we said this.
Yeah,
I mean,
right?
Think that. But now it's like when things are going well and you're having fun, and I think we talked about this too, and you know it as a player, and even me as an equipment guy, when you're around a team that's on a roll, man, you're getting bounces, but you're kind of making your bounces because they're playing so damn hard.
Yeah.
And they deserve the bounces. When you're playing like that, it's just fun to watch, and it's good to see, and the guys are happy. It's fun watching them after games, you know.
Yeah, in the locker rooms,
Those are some of the best times you have as a player and a staff member or whatever. But it's fun to watch. Keep it going, boys.
Yeah, no doubt, yeah. Look, to your point there, like, it seems like the default is the way they're playing. You know, they don't have to, like, go out of their comfort zone to play hard and dig in. It's not like, you know, you can turn it on for a game and turn it on for two games, and then it's kind of back to the default. The default is that, you know? So to me, it's you know, an accumulation of, you know, the guys in the locker room, the energy they're bringing, the fun they're having, as you mentioned, you know, but after the game in the locker room, it's very visible.
Yeah, very.
I mean, it's so that translates. That is the formula. That is, you know, the special ingredient that good teams have. So, amazing foundation to build off, obviously, this year, going into next year, next year, you know, and I think they got something to ride.
Yeah, they do. Sure. And also, don't want to not mention both goalies.
Yeah, right.
Carter's sick. Hope you get better, buddy.
Yeah, no doubt.
I know he's not feeling well right now, but seemed to be at the bottom of whatever it is. But Ersan, man, like, I think he's four in a row baller he's played.
He's stepping in
three
there.
Three or four in a row. Man, he's playing well. Yeah. Carter's playing unbelievable. Keep it going.
Yeah.
That's all we can say. Just keep going, boys. A big test tonight against Nashville. Hopefully get another win here.
No doubt.
Our good buddy Nolan Patrick, Winnipeg native, second overall pick for the Flyers. We apologize. Everyone announced that he had announced his retirement. Baller actually learned it from Elvis and the Ritzy and Elvis podcast, one of their posts. I don't know how in the hell those two had that up, but shout out to Ritzy and Elvy.
Yeah.
Giving us false information, which fake everyone seemed
news.
To. Yeah, breaking news. Elvy's telling me in the morning, I'm like, buddy, I think you saw something. No, we posted it. Oh, okay. Well, it must be true. Dickie Dunn wrote it. Must be true.
Yeah, right. Slap shot. Quickest retirement of all time.
Yeah, right. And then he's not.
Out and back in.
But I believe the reason was Baller was looking into it, and he's recently joined it's a company called the Power Play, and he's their video and skills coach. And I think on there it says he's retired, so I think that's where everyone got it. And then Elliot Friedman obviously was texting back and forth with him, and he said he hasn't officially retired yet. So, you know,
you think that there would be like a, you know, a larger statement that you'd want to hang your hat on before you're releasing something like that. It was all over ESPN.
It was everywhere.
New York Post. And
it was everywhere.
I mean, for it to come out on a, you know, little, you know, small blurb statement on a website seems odd that it would blow up into something like that. But I guess, you know, people are always looking for information and but, you know,
I wish him
the best. I'm glad he's not retired. I mean, he's 25 years old.
Yeah,
I mean,
hopefully like, he can you know, I
play a few more years and maybe find himself a little
bit. Yeah, if he can, that would be great because, you know, like even on a lot of social media things, and there's always people just that want to like create shit, try to stir the pot. But, you know, he was called like everyone around here. Like, he was a bust. This guy wasn't a bust. And I don't care what guy that played or whatever, any expert. I'm telling you, this guy went through shit here, and I can't get into that, but wasn't right.
Yeah.
And people don't know that on the outside. It's not their fault. But this guy, you ask any player that played with him how much skill he had. He played hurt basically from the day he got here.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, and people are like, oh, he had that issue. It had nothing to do with a concussion when he got here. If you remember, he had the surgeries. Mm-hmm. Basically barely played through the junior year that year.
Mm-hmm.
Came, and I remember, I think we talked about this before quickly, around December, all of a sudden, he had this burst of speed, and I was like, whoa. I knew he had sick meds. You could see his hands every day. But then when he started getting healthy finally, you could see, holy shit, this kid can skate too. And but anyway, I just I hate the way it played out for him because he's a quiet kid. Some are like, oh, he's cocky. He's just one of those guys. He is cocky in a funny way, like lipping off and stuff. But he's a really good kid, and it's a shame. Hopefully he can find a way, maybe, if he wants to play. If not, if he's happy with it, then good for him because I really like the kid. I was pretty tight with him when he was here. So really like him, and good luck if you do retire, Patty.
Yeah,
no or doubt. The ledge, as Elvis called him, the legend.
The ledge.
Because Elvis would come in and Patty'd be like, "What's up, Elvie? You absolute legend." So Elvie would call him the ledge.
Oh, the ledge. I like that. It's good.
Other things. Let me hear your input on this one. Jordan Kyrou in St. Louis, our good buddy, which we announced last week. You know, Chief was relieved of his duties with a couple of years, I think, left on his contract. Players usually asked about something. Usually don't. I mean, I guess you could say what you want, freedom mm-hmm. of speech, but he basically said, "I've got no comment. He's not my coach anymore," yeah. Which obviously I feel like personally he could have handled it a little bit better. I know he got buried by a lot of former players and podcasts yeah, and everything. Your thoughts on that?
I thought it was a little weak, and I thought his response to it was even weaker.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, yeah. Could he have had a better response? Absolutely. You know, you're a pro.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you might not have seen eye to eye with Chief, but like, you don't just make a dumbass statement like that.
No,
you know?
I didn't see eye to eye with Chief because he pushed him.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And then, and then he's cornered by the media scrum and, you know, he's an emotional guy, you know, who wants the whole building to boo you, you know, but like, this is karma, right?
I mean, well, Prong said they were saying Lou.
Lou, yes.
His nickname was Lou.
Lou, yeah, right. You know, that's just like clearly cause and effect. I mean, if you would have handled that a little more professionally, that would have never happened, and he wouldn't be bawling on national television and whatever else, you know. So he owned it. He comes back. I think he had a goal and assist or two assists or something like that. And then the whole building's cheering him on and the biggest smile on his face. But that could have been easily avoided. You know, this is just like emotional intelligence. It's like just stop, you know, just stop and think a little bit. Say the right thing, even if you don't necessarily believe it. Yeah,
just be a pro.
Because it would just keep the flies away, and that's a perfect example. So I think he was, it was immature,
Yeah.
Hopefully he learns from it, and some of the young hockey players can learn from that too. Sometimes you just got to bite your lip and keep your mouth shut and just...
I think it has a lot to do, unfortunately, with just today's game in some ways, and the ways some of the younger players have been brought up to,
But you have to realize, you don't see eye to eye with Chief, but like he won a Stanley Cup and the fans and the city believed in him.
You didn't see one bad negative comment.
So it's like this is where like your perspective and your opinion is probably not the same as the rest of the cities and the players.
Right.
So knowing that, this is where you have to just like check yourself and just like know
your environment. I think
he learned.
I think he learned.
Yeah, yeah.
So, a little bit of a gut check. At least, like you said, at least he'd come back and own it. And, maybe he didn't feel what he really said, but at least he'd said it. And, he got a better response the next game. And they've actually won a few in a row here, I guess, a couple anyway. I don't think Chief's feelings were hurt. I think he's all right.
I think Chief's moved on.
I had a good talk with him yesterday for about an hour, so he'll be back today, actually. He's coming back today.
Good.
And real quickly, just want to send our love and prayers to Kelly Chase.
Oh, yeah, right. Chaser, yeah.
And, I was talking to Chief a little bit about that, and we've seen it. You've seen it on tough times. Social media. He's a great man.
Mm-hmm.
Incredible guy. I remember meeting him when I was first getting into the league, and he was playing, and he was just one of those people just would talk to you. Great guy. Big guy in St. Louis there. So wishing you the best.
Yeah, no Chaser, doubt. Yeah, sure, tough man. Times. He's obviously a fighter, so he'll be strong.
Yeah. One other thing in the league, DJ Smith he was fired. I wasn't wishing that. Your thoughts on that? I mean, I guess they expected to be a little better than their record is right now.
Nature of the beast.
I don't know if you saw the clip, but they bring in Jacques Martin and they bring in Daniel Alfredson.
Yeah, I saw that.
Which, I'll tell you this about Alfie. He was obviously a great player, skilled player, but he wasn't soft.
No, right.
And if you saw one of the clips from last night, one of the guys coming to the bench circled out of a hit. Like he had a guy lined up and he waited for him. This guy, I apologize, I can't remember which player it was. I couldn't actually see his name. But Alfie was waiting for him to get off, and he said, "Not good enough. You got to finish that check there. You got to be hard to play against Rouse in this league." And I know it's a long year. I didn't play. I sound like an idiot. I sound like an idiot, like trying to say, "Oh, you got to be tougher." But like, finish a hit there. You're a foot away from the guy. Just run into him.
Well, I agree.
Just run into him. You don't have to try to Zach Ronaldo him through the boards, but just run into him.
That's it. You don't have played the game to understand that element, right. You know?
Like, yeah.
It's a hard game. This is getting in the way. It's just being hard to play against, like you said. I mean, yeah. I mean, this is what you need to do no matter what, but especially when your team's struggling, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you just need a little extra effort and grind there. So
that's all you need.
Little Alfie just ripping you up a little bit and get back.
I was not happy. Wasn't happy, but well, you know what time it is.
I think I know what time it is, Nest.
Styles, number 97.
Whew.
This guy.
Been chasing after this guy for over a year.
He's the man. It's Jeremy Roenick joining us today. Can't wait.
Yes, episode 139. Let's go, Nest.
Let's go.
Before we get to our interview, here's a message from our sponsors at Manscaped. Step into 2024 with confidence, Nass, thanks to Manscaped, where resolutions are met and hairs are neatly kept. As the new year approaches, why not make self-improvement a breeze by keeping your body well-groomed? Introducing Manscaped's Performance Package 5.0 Ultra, the ultimate all-inclusive kit designed to help you feel clean-cut and confident as you should. Featuring the powerhouse Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra, this next-generation trimmer ensures precision and ease when tackling the toughest hairs. So kick off 2024 with a trim above the rest and use code NASTY at manscaped.com for 20% off and free shipping. Nass, what is your highlight from 2023?
Well, the highlight is hopefully by 2024, we've shaved that beard off with this Manscaped 5.0.
A full shave?
I just want it trimmed.
A little trimmy trim.
A little trimmy. You're going to be looking like Santa soon, and definitely need you to trim below the waist. I told you before, makes it look bigger.
That's the truth. It's all an optical illusion.
It sure is. And I'll tell you what, the Performance Package 5.0 Ultra is here, and I'll tell you what. It's got futuristic tendencies, and I think we need to get you into that.
Probably so.
Also, Riggs, the Weed Whacker 2.0 ear and nose hair trimmer, and the essential aftercare products like the Crop Soother, Ball Aftershave Lotion, which you definitely need, and Crop Preserver Anti-Chafing Ball Deodorant.
Oh.
A lot of ball you need to worry about and clean up balls, I should say, and two free gifts. Riggs, your resolutions may come and go, but a well-groomed you is here to stay with Manscaped's latest and greatest. And again, we got to get on the beard and probably below the waist, which I don't know much about right now. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code NASTY at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use code NASTY. Happy New Year to your balls.
Welcome back. I'm Riley Cote.
And I'm Derek Settlemyer. And this week, Riles, just sit back for a second because it's going to take a minute to introduce this gentleman. He's an absolute legend. First round pick, 8th overall, 1988, the Chicago Blackhawks. Veteran of 1,363 games, 513 goals, 703 assists for a total of 1,216 points, 20-year career in the NHL. One of only 47 players to score 500 goals. This is amazing. 9-time All-Star, okay? Wow. One of 5 Americans that have scored 500 goals. U.S. Hockey Hall of Famer. Fingers crossed, should be soon, hopefully, an NHL Hall of Famer because there's no denying he should be. And one of the most charismatic players and one of the best people I was ever fortunate enough to meet in hockey. Jeremy Roenick, J.R. Styles, welcome to the show, brother. Sorry for that hour-long intro, but you are the man, and you deserve it. So what's up, bro?
Hey, I found myself patting myself on the back. That was so good.
You feel pretty good about yourself.
Yeah, man. And you know what? There's more than that. That was just, I didn't want to take up an hour.
That was the Coles notes.
You know, I appreciate it very much. You definitely made my day, and it's good to be on with you guys. You know, I've watched and listened to your show, so I know you guys very well, and it's good to join you.
We appreciate your time, man. We know how busy you are. The Wilderness Whiskey doing a little tour right now. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that? You got that going on.
Yeah, so I'm in Boston right now. I'm just making the rounds. We just started that kind of our New England trial test for our retail. So Whiskey in the Wild, which is my new venture that started last August. We've been going for about a year now. We created a chocolate and a chocolate orange whiskey. It's like one of the best drinking experiences you'll ever have. And we've just been growing and growing and growing. And now we're just getting to go into retail, and we're starting Massachusetts, my home state. And we crushed Western Mass in Springfield yesterday, and we're going to hit Boston today. And my old stomping ground down here in South Shore tomorrow. And we just keep this brand growing. We're getting a lot of great feedback. And I think it's something that is everybody should look into. It's a great gift. We have a very unique bottle. We actually put a flask that's attached to the bottle. And
oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, nobody's ever done what we did in terms of its packaging. So we're really excited about it. It's a lot of work, but you know, you gotta put the work in order to get success, right?
That's right.
That's the truth.
For sure. You're a hardworking guy. That's for sure. You also have a new podcast out with our buddy Timmy Peel.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. And I think it's, you know, Tim has always been a good friend of mine. And I think he's a good friend to a lot of players that play in the National Hockey League. He's got a lot of respect. Both of us kind of have that same kind of disrespect that we've felt from the National Hockey League. We've kind of been kind of strewn out because of certain mentalities or attitudes or not only on our side, but on their side also. And we both have a very unique look about the league. So, and you know, to have a referee as a partner and part of a show, you get such a different mentality and different take. And Timmy's just fantastic. So it's Snipes and Stripes on nofilter.net every Wednesday at 7 Eastern time, 4 Pacific. And we're having a lot of fun. We've had some great guests on. We've had Evander Kane. Last night we had Pat Maroon on last night, who was absolutely spectacular.
Yeah, the big rig.
Yeah, we had Marty Brodeur on a couple weeks ago. So, you know, we're just having a lot of fun, just like you guys. I mean, sitting around talking hockey is easy for us and it's fun. And we made it a little different. Usually I have the locker room mouth, you know, but we've taken the locker room mouths out of it and kept it more PG-13. So everybody can listen.
I think we've tried to do that. I think it's more on me. I kind of slip up quite a bit, but no, you guys are doing a great job. And I've known Timmy for a while as well. And he's actually been on the show with us, and he's such a good dude, funny man. And a good man, good family man. And I was so pumped when I saw you guys were doing it. I was like, dude, you guys are going to do really well.
Yeah. We've had a very, very good start. And just like you guys know, consistency is everything, right? So, you know, you can't be all nice all the time. You can't be all mean all the time. You have to find that happy median. And I think we've kind of found it.
Yeah. Yeah. How long did it take you to find your groove since you left NBC? Like with that podcast and just being out there.
Actually, I didn't miss a groove one bit.
I don't think you ever have.
Yeah, I know.
No, you know, one thing that I did when I was playing is I started a lot of relationships and I did start other businesses and I got involved with things. And it's not that I saved my money, because I lost a shit ton of money in a lot of different ways, but I also made a lot of money in different ways. But so I was never sitting here relying on, you know, on NBC or anything else for, you know, to make money or to stay alive. And, you know, I have a very good life. I'm very active. I play a lot of golf. You know, I didn't miss a beat. Obviously you don't like when your name is slandered and they tried to slander me, which happens. I mean, you got to live and learn, but you know, I think things happen for a reason, and I've just been cruising right along and having fun and just continuing to grow my life. And unfortunately there's other parts of me that are growing faster, which is my, you know, it's tough to stay lean when you're retired and traveling, you know, probably 25 pounds overweight, but that means I'm happy. So everything
right.
Well fed.
Riles, once he retired a few years back there, he's actually gone the other way. He's as lean as could be, but he's also doing a lot of this yoga and all his other stuff.
I just stopped eating the shit that was.
Yeah, he was having. Well, I had to
beef up fighting the big
coach,
dogs.
You have more discipline than I do. There's no question. I see. I see a donut or a bagel or a glass of tequila. I can't stop it. I can't help myself.
So as long as it's not a blueberry bagel, JR. But that's me and JR and Riles. I wanted to start off. You go to Chicago. Obviously drafted first round, dude. You had to own that city, bro. Like, come on. I know there were other players there, but like you're. Your attitude, like I said,
swagger.
Yeah, just the swagger, but the way you played the game, I don't want to say reckless, but reckless as a skilled guy as well. When I say reckless, I mean, you just played hard. I shouldn't say reckless, but you did put your body.
I think reckless is I think it's a perfect word. And I think that my whole life is that way. So, and I played that way, but when I got to Chicago, I was not that type of player.
Okay.
I was a very passive. I was 160 pounds. I was definitely intimidated. I walked into the Chicago Blackhawks locker room the first time when I was 18 years old. I should have been in high school, actually, because I left after my junior year. So I should have been sitting in class with Tony Amonte at Thayer.
Yeah, right.
Instead, I walk into the Blackhawks locker room and see Al Secord naked. And I'm like, this is not what I signed up for.
This isn't high school.
I've never seen a grown man naked look like that in my life. I mean, he was ripped up. He had so much hair on him. He had a beard. He had a cut. He had a receding hairline, no teeth. And I'm like, oh my God, what did I just get myself into? And I was actually forced to play a very hard physical game. Mike Keenan wanted a tough team. He wanted a team that was physically intimidating, mentally intimidating, a hard team to play against. And I had to kind of adopt a physical aspect to my game. So I used my speed rather than the weight of my body to use as my velocity to start throwing my weight all over the place. And it hurt me, but I also laid a lot of damage on other people, and the fans loved it. So it kind of became part of my, part of my personality. And I truly, to this day, wouldn't change the way that I played at all. I mean, I think I was able to do a lot of damage in a lot of different ways, but damage to my own body. Yes. But it was, I like to be one of those guys that can do different things, not a one dimensional player. And I thought I gave it all. There's no question about it. I gave everything I had. There's no question.
Every night you did. That's for sure. I mean, we can get to your few Philly years in a little bit, but seeing you that way every night, like all the games, you gave everything you had every night. You played hurt. Like you said, you were reckless. But at Chicago team, you guys had made it to the finals there the one year against Pittsburgh. And I remember I was my junior year of college, I think, and I drove an hour down the road so I could watch those games. But must have been pretty exciting to play in the finals. Obviously sucks to lose, but which we both were part of that as well. But it was fun to watch you, in Chicago.
Those are good years. Chelly got there in 1991 in that trade when they sent Dennis Savard to Montreal because I think they saw something special in me. So they were able to go get Chris Chelios. We had Steve Larmer, Michel Goulet on that team. We had a bomb of a team, and playing in that final against Pittsburgh, we won like 11 games straight going into that final and had a 4-1 lead going into the third, in that game one of the finals. And I remember Steve Larmer saying, JR, you got to take advantage of this opportunity in the final, because you never know if you're going to get another opportunity to play for the Stanley Cup again. And I'm 22 years old. I'm in my first Stanley Cup final. I'm like, what's wrong with you, Lars? Yeah,
exactly.
I'm going to be in like a number of finals. Well, sure as shit, that was the only final that I ever made in 1992. I never got back again, even though I was on some great teams, like my 2004 Philadelphia Flyer team was the best team that I was ever associated with, followed by the San Jose Sharks in 2008, 2009, the best team I was ever a part of. And we didn't even get out of the second round in on either of those teams. And right. It was, well, actually Philly, we got to this to the semifinal and hit the injury bug. But it's a hard thing to do, man. It's a hard thing to win.
Hard.
And I was talking to Pat Maroon last night. This lucky bastard wins three in a row. I was like, I wish I would have had him going to Vegas, you know, for all my Vegas trip. I would have won a million.
Oh, shit.
And deservedly so. Pat Maroon is an amazing, amazing man. And but some people have the luck and some people just don't. I didn't.
Yeah. You know, it's crazy with Pat Maroon. He was drafted by the Flyers, and I actually coached him in the minors. And it was my first year coaching in 2011. And we actually ended up sending him home. And he had no job. And
he was the leading scorer.
He was the leading scorer of our team. And it was just, you know, we had a shitty team. There was some, you know, off ice stuff going on. But it's amazing to see him bounce back and find that resilience. Yeah. And obviously, I mean, finding a way to win three cups in a row is, you know, no
yeah,
joke,
he's had a good, he's had a very good road, an interesting path, but, it's nice to see good people come out on the other side. And he's one of them.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Sorry. I was just going to ask you, you know, coming in as a young guy, in Chicago there, what was your relationship like with Mike Keenan? Being such an old school guy.
You know, I always had tough coaches. My dad was my coach when I was a kid, and he was extremely tough on me. Mm-hmm. Very, very disciplined and very, very strict in terms of the, you know, the practice, being there on time, you know, giving a hard work effort every time you're on the ice. You know, I remember my dad making me walk home, you know, the last half mile outside the car with my equipment on because I didn't play hard on the ice. He said, you know, you're not going to play hard out, you know, on the ice. You can put in the extra work to get home, you know, just little stuff like that, that just puts these messages and these things into your head. These, obviously lessons. My high school coach, name was Arthur Valicenti. One of the most intimidating looking guys. He looked like the Kingpin mafia head leader, you know, like,
oh,
the,
Jesus.
Yeah, like the boss. And he had was mean, and he was forceful, and he was yelled and screamed. And then I had Mike Keenan. So for me, having a tough coach was almost needed for me, because I needed that at some point to be reminded that there's a full game to be played. Not, you know, there's not a partial game to play. You got to play all sorts of aspects of the game, and you have to be multi-dynamic. And I liked it when somebody yelled at me, because there's something about showing somebody that you can do it and getting pissed off and throw it back into their face and saying, you know, I told you so, I can do it. And then also saying, thank you for giving me that motivation to get there. I was never one to say, oh, well, he doesn't like me, and I feel bad, and you know, he yelled at me. I used it as a positive, and you know, it's not personal. These guys want what's best for the team, and they know they'll put pressure on you because they know you have better. And I understood that, so I never took it personal, like a lot of the kids do today.
Yeah, they certainly do.
Yeah, we've had a few guys on that had Keenan, so we hear kind of like all spectrum of the stories of, you know, different experiences with them. You know, it's nice to hear your perspective, because I think that's the right attitude. You got to take it at the way you described it. You know, this is about winning games, and they're challenging you, so you take it for what it is.
Don't you think it's kind of strange to watch the game today, right? And you watch teams play, and it's almost like there's no motivation. Like there's mm-hmm. nothing that even when they're playing a game that they should win, and they just come out and just lay an egg. You know, perfect example. We just tore up the Buffalo Sabres the other day, and deservedly so. I mean, they've absolutely put a terrible, terrible product on the ice in front of their own fans. They go in and beat Rangers, they go and beat Boston, they go in and beat Vegas in their own buildings, and they come home and they lose to Montreal. They lose 9-4 to Columbus. I mean, just pathetic performances. And you kind of wonder, what like What do you have to do to get a team to understand how to play hard? And sometimes it's tough coaching. Yeah. It's you know, making sure the team has a mentality and has an identity that they play at. And the fact that this coach in Buffalo, you know, I love the Granados. It's nothing about a person, but you can't be afraid to be tough and to chastise or to give some sort of punishment for bad play. It doesn't seem that it happens anymore.
Well, you're totally right. Mm-hmm. And building on that, after you finished you go to Arizona, you're in Chicago for 8 years. You go to Arizona, you got Schoenfeld, and I've heard he was a pretty tough coach. Chief has told me a lot of stories about him, but was he kind of like Keenan that way, or was he just kind of tough? Yeah.
No, he was very much. And by the way, he Jim Schoenfeld could probably beat the hell out of every single person on that team. with the exception of maybe Rick Tocchet.
But
Shoney and I, we had like a, you know, love-hate relationship. I respected him, but you know, Shoney took it to a different level at certain points, and then I would snap back at him, and then we'd have a little snap. And we always came back to the respect, but you know, him and I almost went to blows in a team locker room.
I was going to ask you about that
during a meeting. Literally, we're watching game tape, and he threw a snide remark at me about one of the plays that I had made. And he showed it again and again and again, and then stopped the tape. And, you know, there was talk about me playing a defensive role and winning the Selke trophy. And I don't know. Last thing I ever want to do in my life is win the Selke trophy or the Lady Bing. I don't want to win those trophies. But he said something like that and in front of all my guys. And I snapped back at him and I told him to shove fist, you know, where the sun doesn't shine. And he kicked everybody out of the locker room. He takes his jacket off, like he takes his sweatshirt jacket off, and I'm sitting there saying, you know, obviously I'm looking very, you know, very calm and very cool, but inside my brain, inside my body, I'm like, holy shit, this guy is gonna beat the crap out of me. Like
he's a big man. He's a big man in shape too.
I would have no chance against Jim Schoenfeld if he went to blows. So I'm sitting there like, what am I gonna do if he actually comes and tries to beat me up? And I'm like, the only thing that I can do is I can bite him in the balls and try to get him as right. It's the only thing I can do is get a hold of his midsection and hold on for dear life, because that's the only thing that would make him stop beating the shit out of me. Literally, that was going through my mind, and luckily it didn't go to that point, and we talked it out. But he was a good coach, but he was a tough one. He was a tough one.
Well, let me ask you this, because I know John Tortorella, who obviously is a coach here in Philly now, he was an assistant. Was Torts as an assistant more of a, not as like, you know,
like more of a player,
like more coach of a player, like, hey, like JR, like, you know, like kind of that guy, the friendlier guy, which most assistants have to be, or they don't have to, but.
Yeah. One of my favorite coaches of all time. John is, he was like that as an assistant coach. He was a guy that was really, he could talk to the players. He had a great personality. Like, he smiled a lot, but he also talked to you the way that you need to be talked to. He didn't stroke your back. He didn't really browbeat you, but he had a cool and very accepted level of whether it was criticism or suggestions or something. He had a really good way of dealing with players through the coaches, right? And you know, he's a tough coach. There's no question about it. He's a no bullshit guy. And that's how I always loved John Tortorella. He is one of the old school guys, but I think he has a level of knowledge and how he feels about the game in his heart. And that's how he coaches. And I think what he's doing for Philly is absolutely spectacular. I think he's the perfect coach. I think he's the perfect coach in Philly. I think they're all getting it now. You see what they're doing this year. There's nobody that put Philly where they are right now in the beginning of the year. You know, Keith Jones is doing an amazing job of bringing in the right people. Danny Briere is bringing back guys. Like, listen, and I really think it's it's a mentality, right? You go into a team, you put on a jersey, there's an attitude and a mentality behind the jersey you put on. And everybody knows the Philadelphia Flyers to be a hard-nosed, in-your-face, Broad Street Bullies type of mentality. And they haven't had that in the last 5 years. Now you bring in John LeClair into the locker room. You bring Paul Holmgren in the locker room. You bring Patrick Sharp back. You bring, Bob Murray, who's a very hard-nosed type of mentality of a hockey mind. There's so many guys that they have brought in to build an identity with those players. Those players have to react a certain way, and they're doing it. I love what John Tortorella says. We win because we have balls.
That's right.
It's awesome. I mean, that's exactly right. And more teams should play the way that the Flyers are playing, the way that the Arizona Coyotes are playing, that in-your-face, hard team to play against. And it's impressive.
Yeah. I was going to ask you real quick about – I know Danny Briere was just getting his start in the NHL in Arizona, but I know he only had a few games, I think, while you were there. But
no, he lived with me for 6 months.
Oh, he did live with you. Okay. Yeah, I was looking at his games played. I wasn't sure how long, but
no, he lived with me. He actually lived in my in my guest house for 6 months when he was a rookie.
That's awesome. Well, what I was gonna ask you about him was, so when he was breaking into the league, and Riley and I have talked about this before. Obviously, he's not — I call him little guy, we call each other little guy, but he was playing in a hard era. Like, it was a hard game, right? Like, obviously it's way harder than it is now, but kind of got to give him a lot of credit for, he had a really good career, and he wasn't a very big guy, and he was playing when it was a hard, harder game, fearless. I should say.
He was, and coach, that's a really good description. Fearless. Like, he was smaller, not that strong, but he was not afraid to go into the fray, right? Mm-hmm. He went to those high traffic areas. Danny Briere was such a smart hockey player. And obviously we know the talent was there. But his ability to find those holes and be in the right place at the right time and have such an accurate shot. I mean, look at his playoff record, right? Yeah. Look how many goals he scored in the playoffs. This guy is a clutch performer and knows the game as well as anybody. He did such a great job in the minors, in coaching and managing, and he's going to do the same thing in Philly. He's one of my favorite people in the world, and there's nobody that deserves it more than Danny Briere, to tell you the truth.
I agree. We have a pretty good relationship, and he's a good friend, and so happy when he got the job. And he's like you said, he and Jonesy and everyone they brought in, they're doing a phenomenal job there.
Well, listen, you can't create an identity without people that don't understand what that identity is. And everybody in that organization has worn, with the exception of Bob Murray, has worn that jersey and knows what it means to put that jersey on. It means more than just slipping on and go playing. There's a history behind it. And there's an attitude behind it, and they're playing like it this year.
100%. Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, they're definitely building the foundation as Ed Snyder would have loved to see his legacy kind of continue. Yeah. Is like they're bringing they're bringing the essence back, the spirit back, and again from top down, right? I mean, everyone's buying into it, and they're laying out this foundation for what you'd call it a rebuild, which could be somewhat questionable now.
Yeah, but you know what's crazy, coach? It's amazing. It's amazing watching other teams do it, right? And there's a blueprint. There's a blueprint for how you win. And it's amazing. Sometimes it's good when you learn it, but you also have to give other people kudos to learn from other people, from watching. And that's why I say, I keep harping on Buffalo, but they allow me to do it, because how can Buffalo not see how Philly is playing, how Philly is hard to play against, how Arizona Coyotes, who – their roster is as diminished as anybody, but they got some good young players, but they play a certain way. They play with an identity and an attitude. Mm-hmm. Why does another team say, why can't we play like that? They don't pay attention. And you can't just put your skates on and tie them up and going out there and think it's just going to get turned on. You have to prepare for it, and you have to be willing to sacrifice it. And sometimes I just don't see these teams. They just don't get it. They don't get it.
And it's the inability to put these teams together with the right Chemistry, right? I mean, because it doesn't, it's that's not about necessarily like, you know, all the great pieces, but like you look at the Flyers, like the pieces they added, they're all contributing, but they're all bringing, you know, the main ingredient, you know? Yeah. So it's like, it's beyond the skill, and it's, I mean, obviously you have to have skill, there's no question, but
yeah,
you know,
look at the Bruins, look what the Bruins are doing too, right? The Bruins lose five absolutely integral pieces to their team from last year. And, you know, they bring in some of these young kids, and some of these young kids are taking advantage of the opportunity. And again, they're still up on top of the league. I mean, it's, again, it's, you gotta understand how to win. You got to understand who you play for, and you got to understand what it takes to win. It's a hard line. You guys know it's a hard, it's a hard line, but if you're a professional and you're expected to bring it every night. But I feel bad for certain fans in this league that are just getting gypped of honest efforts, just honest efforts. That's it.
Yep, for sure. So you 5 years in Arizona, JR, and then you come to Philly. First of all, like what was one of the main reasons that brought you to Philly besides, I mean, obviously it's the Philadelphia Flyers and it's a big time organization.
Yeah. Rick Tocchet had a lot to do with that. You know, Rick Tocchet's one of my favorite teammates of all time, and I respected him immensely. I wanted to go to a team that had a chance to win the Stanley Cup. And the three teams that I was really down to the wire on were Detroit, Boston, and Philly. Detroit, really, I didn't make a decision. It was more a family decision for Detroit. Obviously, their team was stacked, but it was more of a family living situation. And Detroit, with what my wife did in terms of her riding and my daughter's passion for riding, Detroit was not a good fit for me. And Boston actually offered me one of the largest contracts I think in the history of their organization in 2001. And it would have been nice to play at home, but they had just traded Billy Guerin. And I'm like, I mean, you can't be serious about wanting to win a Stanley Cup if you trade a person like Billy Guerin.
Right.
Billy Guerin is like one of the fiercest competitors and one of my favorite best teammates and one of the best guys I've ever. And he's doing some great things in Minnesota, will continue to. But you can't trade Billy Guerin. And expect now I'm going to go in and we're going to win a Stanley Cup without Billy Guerin. And Philly was booming. I mean, Tocchet, Primo, Simone Gagné, Recchi, Leclerc, you know, Desjardins. We had a monster of a team, and, you know, accumulated in 2004 with the best team that I was ever associated with. And we should have won a cup that year. But I love Philly. Philly was my type of town, you know, like I played hockey the way that Philly fans, you know, root for their teams. And that's with passion and energy and commitment and an expectation of excellence. That's how they are. That's how they roll. And, you know, still to this day, I have a relationship with Philly fans everywhere I go. Everywhere I go in the world, Philly fans come up to me and our relationship and I hug every single one of them. It was different than me in Chicago. Chicago fans and I were just two peas in a pod. We just love each other. And it was just the love, passion, respect. Philly is a little bit deeper. It's like, let's knock each other's face in.
You
know? And I love that. I love that passion.
They appreciate guys like you for sure.
Yeah, I know. I mean, just like I gotta say, I'm sorry pumping your tires here, but you come to Philly and I was fortunate enough to meet you before when I was one of the assistants with Philadelphia. You were obviously in Chicago, but you were just such a good dude and such a people person. Obviously, everyone knows that. But you were so good to us as a staff, even though I was down the hall with the Phantoms. You seemed to like couple times a week always come down and say, hey, Dr. D, he's the only guy I ever called Dr. D. Yeah, and I just thought it was so funny. A doctor. Yeah, I am a doctor.
I'd come down and say, who do you like, the Dolphins?
Yeah, yeah. It was funny. It's him and Talk would come in sometimes. We'd have the paper. It'd be a day off on a Sunday. We're like looking at these idiots giving their picks and we're trying to decide. But but you were just you're so good to all of us. But one of the funny things I want to bring up, I don't know if you remember this, but I think it was Harry Bricker was telling me You guys were in New York, and you know, I guess you took the train or the bus, not really sure, but you get up to the room, probably did the old bag chuck the skills he talks about, Al Gill talks about all the time, because you're in New York City, yeah. Dude. And I know I didn't sleep trip. Much in New York every City. That was one of my every favorite trip. Places. But funny story is, you know, Hitch, you know, you and Hitch probably were going back and forth. And I think Hitch did with everyone, you know. Sure. But you go to your room, you come back, and I guess you got this just ridiculously sick yellow suit on. I guess. And you jump, the elevator opens up and Hitch is off it. And JR, like, so he steps into the elevator, hits the next floor so he can get right back off. And you get off the next floor and Hitch turns around and Harry goes, "Where are you going in a suit like that? You're going out. You know he's going out." Rick's like, "Oh, I'm just going for a dinner, Hitch. What do you mean? Where are you going in a suit like that?"
Let's just say that suit didn't look the same the next day.
Yeah, exactly. Oh man, you might have been missing the jacket to it or something too. But yeah, your time in Philly, man.
You play hard, work hard, man. Play hard, work hard.
That's right.
Guys. But, yeah, and you're right. I did the bag chuck every single trip. And I made sure that we brought guys with us. We brought the young guys with us. We made sure it was a team thing. We tried not to have cliques. It's like, we're on the road. This is where everything bonds, right? This is where the boys gel, right? This is where teams become teams. So we're going to go out. We're going to eat dinner together. We're going to drink wine together. We're going to go do shots together. We're going to get in trouble together. And then we're going to go on the ice and win together. And that was, that's what it was all about. Because listen, we were very, very lucky, and you know, D, you saw how we were in Philly, you know, in the locker room.
Yeah.
We played the best game in the world, and we played a game for a living. And you know, I tried to make it fun all the time. And obviously, when you're on the ice and you're playing the game, that's a different level. You play it and you play it serious. You play it hard. But I was one of those guys that can turn it on and turn it off. Right. I could, if there's a commercial, I can go dance on the ice like I did, or I can throw puck to kids, or I can have fun. But then when the puck dropped, you know, I'm going to knock you in your fucking head. You know, yeah. I definitely wanted to win, and I wanted to win hard and bad. Not everybody can do that, but it's important that, you know, when you say these goals, you go out and you bring people and you create that camaraderie with your teammates, and it's because it's going to pass on. Right. They're going to pass it on to the next guy and the next guy. And you hope you create a dynasty that, and mentality. And I think a lot of guys that I took care of, did the same thing for, you know, for their young guys when they came up. It's a really important part of sports that you don't really hear about or talk about. And, you know, coach, you went through it. You've had your guys that, you know, that took you under their wing, and, you know, you learn from them. It's one of the best parts of being a pro athlete.
Yeah, you know what? So true. That's so true. As an you know, just an equipment guy, you see guys like yourself and even other players, JR, that aren't as like as an effective player. When I say that, I mean as like points and everything that you brought to the table. But if you spoke about Billy Garen a minute ago, I remember when we brought him to camp he came in as a tryout. This guy, I've known him for years, and he's an unbelievable person, but I was praying that we kept him just for the room. He was unbelievable. He knew he was at the end of the road kind of, but he had another year left in him and he ended up not making it. But man, I was so disappointed because those kind of guys are so important. Like Riley won't say it, but you know, when we went to the finals in 2010, he wasn't getting in the lineup, but Lavi had him warm up every game. So he was in the locker room before. Yep. And he brought very so important. Much to the table for the players.
Absolutely. Very important. It's exactly right. So, you know, I missed that part. I missed that part of the game. There's no question about it. I don't know how they are now. I there's no way that, that they could be like we were back in the 90s. Right.
I don't think so.
I remember there was I was playing for the Coyotes at the time. It was like 97, 98. And myself, Keith Tkachuk, Craig Janney, Bobby Corkum, the four of us had this crazy idea that we're going to go out and just rip it up on our Canadian trip. And the night before the game, we go into Edmonton and we go out and we drink till 3 o'clock in the morning. We came back and we are just, you know, we're just not in good shape. But we wake up the next morning and we go to practice and we had just a dynamite game. We won like 6-2. We all played great and we're like, hey, we gotta do this
every night. So,
yeah. Play so guilty.
It was like you play guilty. And for like 2 months, we did it every game when we were on the road. And it was going well, it was going great, and it was tiring, but we were winning, we were playing great. And all of a sudden we hit a skid. We started playing bad. And we tried to keep it up. And then Bobby Smith got a hold of us and brought us up. And just absolutely reamed us a new one. And you know, Keith is like, don't tell me how to prepare for games. Don't tell me what I can do before games. He goes, I'm the captain of the team. You know, I'll decide what I'm going to do and how I'm going to prepare. You know, Keith Tkachuk is one of the biggest legends that I've ever seen, that I've ever played with, that I've ever been a part of. He's one of my favorite people on the planet. And the way he took care of his trainers, way he took care of his players, the way that he played, the way that he captained, it was kind of funny watching his dynamic, and especially right in front of a GM when he's yelling at us that we're being a bunch of degenerates. And it was just good. It was good times, man. Really good memories.
Nass, do you ever struggle buying tickets to Flyers games or concerts?
Well, as a matter of fact, I have had a few struggles.
Have you?
In my day. I was trying to get some Michael Bublé Christmas time show tickets. And luckily, with Game Time, I was able to find a fast and easy way to get the tickets. And you can do that with sports, music, comedy, theater, whatever you want to do. They have killer last-minute deals. You get the view of your seat. So they saved me for my Michael Bublé.
Oh, man.
Yes.
Can't have a Christmas without Michael.
No, the boobsy.
No way.
Everybody loves boobs.
Well, the Game Time app is easy to use. Anything from last minute tickets, views from all the seats in the venue, to the lowest prices guaranteed, even cancellation protection. Game Time is the only ticketing app that gives you the complete peace of mind with your purchase. All in prices show your total upfront, so you know you're getting a great deal before you check out. Buy tickets in seconds with two taps, Nast.
You can do it. I'll tell you what. You can find exclusive flash deals and sponsor deals on tickets for football, basketball, baseball, concerts, comedy, theater, and more. Whatever you really want, Riggs, even Michael Bublé, as I did. I'll tell you what. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use code NASTY for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code NASTY, NASTY, for $20 off. Download Game Time today. Last minute tickets, lowest price guaranteed. GameTime.co. Yeah, I wanted to say this real quick, that the big, big overtime goal you scored in Toronto for the Flyers, one of my favorite sellies ever. First of all, what a snipe.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, snizzity snipe. Yeah. But just I came off my – I remember Adam Patterson was sitting with me because his dad was a scout, as we know, Dennis Patterson. But we were watching a game, and, dude, we came off that couch. But I just love you running down the – what a goal. And for Philly, I mean, you put the JR jinx on Toronto up until, last year, I guess.
Yeah. They didn't win a round for 19 years.
Yep.
19 years. They did not win a round. But that was my favorite goal of all time, D. It was my favorite snipe for a lot of different reasons. Number one, because it was in Toronto. I love playing in Toronto. I've always loved being there. I love playing in front of those fans. I love playing just that old, the original six. That rivalry between the Flyers and Toronto that in those couple of years was intense. It was against Eddie Belfour, one of my favorite goaltenders of all time. I think one of the top three goaltenders in history. And I was with Eddie last week doing a signing. And he said something that was really cool to me, because we're just talking about the goal with some of the people that were at the signing, and Eddie's like, "Yeah, I know, I was in goal for that shot." and Eddie said to me, "He goes, JR. He says that's probably one of the best shot that I've ever seen."
Really?
And I was like, Like I could have cried. Like I could have cried. You know, I love Eddie so much, but to hear him say that and to know that that was my favorite goal of all time. I mean, the whole dynamic of Darcy Tucker knocking, you know, Sammy Kapanen to oblivion, and Sammy Kapanen having the guts and the and the desire to stand up and, you know, duck leg to the towards the bench. Primo coming, Primo getting off the bench to pull him into the bench, and I jump out. This building is as loud as I've ever heard a building, and then you could have heard a pin drop.
Yep.
When that puck went in, and you know, to hear Eddie, you know, kind of talk about it from his perspective was really, really cool. And every time I go back to Toronto, every single time, there's not a person that I don't talk about hockey that say, you know what, you're such an asshole. That goal just killed us. It killed me. And but with respect, right?
Yeah,
and,
yeah,
of course. You
know, it's memorable.
You're definitely a fan one. Favorite. That's for sure. Everywhere you go, and it's the way you played the game and the person you are. I was gonna bring up you just kind of brought it up, but that the clip of you dancing when you were with the Kings, man, that's one of my favorite. I remember seeing that. I was like, dude, this is what the game needs. People that have can have fun with it.
I wish the old fuddy duddies that have been a part of the National Hockey League for it seems like 1,000 years that never seem to go away. I wish they had the same kind of mentality.
I know. Yeah. But it was awesome. God, I love that.
Yeah, that was
again, it's having fun. You know, we're in Vegas preseason.
Yeah.
For this at this game, and we're playing in a barn that doesn't have hockey, so obviously the boards are kind of mishmash, and the glass comes out, and the people don't know how to fix the glass, and the people in the stands are getting, you know, kind of restless. It's 20 minutes and they haven't been able to fix the glass. So, you know, the music is playing, Bee Gees come on. I start dancing. Yeah. People start dancing in front of me. You know, I'm getting excited. So what do? You entertain people. That's why people come to the rink, is to be entertained. And the fact that some people were horrified and embarrassed as a team or as a league, or that you can dance in front of a bunch of people and entertain people and not be serious. Like, oh my gosh, God forbid somebody does something that makes people laugh and makes people have fun and does what we're supposed to do and entertain. I've never understood that mentality. I've never understood, like, how is me dancing in the middle of the ice in front of 20,000 people that are very restless and bored right now, that I can entertain them in a preseason game that doesn't mean jack shit, and you can get mad at me for that. Those people who don't like that or don't accept the fact that we can entertain and make people laugh and make people feel good or embarrass themselves like I did, because it's not fun. It's not, of course I'm embarrassing myself by dancing. I'm not the greatest dancer, and I'm doing it in front of, I mean, that takes guts. For people to look down on that and say bad things about that, I feel bad for them. I feel bad for their life. I feel bad for their mentality, and I feel bad the way that they see life, because I'm never going to be one of those people. I'm gonna make people laugh. I'm gonna make people feel good. I'm gonna entertain people as much as I possibly can. And if you don't like it, that's too bad. Go live in your miserable little cave or your basement, and shut all the blinds and shut all the windows, turn off the phones, turn off the television, and, you know, just go on to your miserable life, because that's not me.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more on that. You know, anybody that tries to dim someone's light is just like living a rough life. You know, I understand, like, hockey, you know, is like, you know, from the old school, and there's certain, you know, unwritten rules. But to me, what you describe there is probably what the game needs more of. You know, it's like, you know, the fun police, like, who determines?
Yeah, fun police, exactly, exactly. But you know what people lose sight of. What people lose sight of, and especially the upper management, both in teams and in the league, they lose focus about what is really important. What's really important what's really important is winning, mm-hmm. because you win for them to make money. But how do they make money? They make money by putting people in the seats. Mm-hmm. They make money by creating fans, by creating people that follow them, that buy their jerseys, that go into the arena, they buy their tickets, and you know, they pay for you know, television to watch the games. They make their money by us as players entertaining the fans who pay all of their hard-earned money. Okay.
That's right.
They pay their hard-earned money to pay these ridiculous prices for tickets to go to games, right? And they buy the jerseys and they buy the hot dogs and they buy the Cokes, they buy the beer, and they sit in the seats and they cheer for you because they want to be entertained. And those are the people that you have to cater to. And it's both entertainment by doing something fun, throwing pucks to kids, acknowledging people in the stands, you know, saying thank you that they're there. And then when the puck drops, knocking somebody in the head, scoring goals, putting in a hard day's effort, entertaining them by your play. It's a complete full circle. It all is connected with making sure that the fan is happy, because that's how those teams make money. You create more excitement and you create more attention and you create more love by how you perform, by how you act, by how you feel about them. And I think there's a lot of people that lose sight of that. They really do.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
I think, yeah, so too.
I agree.
You know, it's funny. I have it written down here, but another great thing you did was on Halloween when you were playing here in Philly with the whole
that Clarkie. Was classic.
That was so classic. I mean, everybody in the building loved it. Even Clarkie, you know,
showed
the
motion.
Chuckle, yeah. You know, that he does. And that was another thing. Like those, like you said, man, people want to see shit like that. They want to see a character. They want to see, and it wasn't like you were a guy fucking around.
Hey, Dr. D, you know the story behind that, right? When I was putting the Bobby Clark outfit together, said, hey, JR, I have Bobby's last pair of pants that he wore, the Cooperalls, the actual pants that Bobby wore back in the 70s. I'm like, no, you don't. He's like, yeah, I do. So I got the wig. We got the jersey made up, brought those pants into the locker room that night.
Yeah.
And I tried to put them on over my girdle, right? Because I wore a girdle pants. And the pants didn't fit over the girdle. They were so small. So I had to take the girdle off. I had to take the shin pads off. And I could barely put Bobby Clark's actual Cooperall pants over my thighs and my ass.
Wow.
To get them on to go on for warm-up. That's the size that Bobby was when he played. You know, to do what he did at his size with, you know, with his condition and all that stuff that he had to battle through. That was fun. And I was so happy that Bobby was smiling, because I was rolling the dice on that.
Yeah,
you were rolling the dice.
Yes, you were.
I'm rolling the dice on that one. And, you know,
he laughed. He loved it.
I love Clarkie. I love Clarkie. I really do. Very, very awesome person.
It's like cool. You said too earlier, like, yeah, you're playing around right there. You know, you, everyone loved it. But when the puck drops,
yeah,
it's business. And I think that's a reason why you could get away with what you did.
For sure.
Because everyone knew you showed up to play no matter what. Yeah. You could be playing pranks, doing whatever. And speaking of your dancing, I remember a certain little what do you call it? A spotlight after a win. The disco ball. Sorry, the disco ball. JR had a little dance after wins and stuff like that.
So, I did it before too.
That's right.
So I used to do it 5 minutes before the meeting. You know, I would turn the lights off in the locker room, and I had the disco ball, and I had like a laser beam that hit the disco ball. And I remember Todd Fedoric would stand up with his stick and pretend he was playing the bass, right? And I did a dance to you know, the Party Train, the Gap Band, every and it just drove Hitch crazy and all that stuff.
I remember. What
are you doing? I know. Why you gotta do all that? Why you gonna do that? I want to get serious. I'm like, I am being serious, you know. And I remember Mr. Schneider was walking, the owner of the team was walking through the, you know, down the hallway right when I started this dance. And he walked by the door, the locker room was all dark, and he saw all the, you know, the
lasers
dancing. And he snuck in and around the door and sat on one of the stalls. And I finished the dance, and there's Todd Fedoric, you know, Fridgy. He's playing and when the lights come on, there's Mr. Schneider and Fridge. And Fridge goes, "Oh my God." And Fridge is looking at Mr. Schneider, and then Mr. Schneider goes, "Hey, I hope you guys have this much energy on the ice tonight, right?"
Yeah.
And you know, Todd Fedoric, he's, you know, he's a fighter, and he loves his job, and he worries about his job. He's like, "Oh my God, I'm gonna get sent down tomorrow. I'm never gonna play again in the National Hockey League. Mr. Schneider's got me playing,
the air base.
You know, and I'm like, Fridgy, he loves it. Just go out and have a good. Just go out and have a good game. Go have a couple fights. And
yeah,
yeah.
And he did. Fridgy went out. He had two fights. We won the game like 5-1. I had a couple goals. And Fridge, I think I come in afterwards. I'm like, see, Fridge, it's all good.
He goes,
"You think Mr. Schneider will be back tomorrow?"
Oh man, that must have been a treat. You and Fridgy together, man, because he's a goofball himself, man. Holy,
he's a beauty. You gotta love, Fridgy's one of everybody's favorite people in the world because of what he brings to the table. His jubilant life, and you know, he had a tough road, man. He had a tough job, and he did it as good as anybody.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. He's doing well now. He's doing Flyers radio and having some fun, being a goofball. So
because he's got personality.
Exactly.
He's got personality. Exactly. Hello.
Yeah. No shit. Exactly. Hey. Yeah. Well, I wanted to ask you, our friend and your friend as well, Craig Berube. You know, obviously recently let go with St. Louis, but what's the story with him finding revenge on you?
Yeah, let's just say I think Mr. Armstrong in St. Louis is an idiot. Well, he's not an idiot. I'm not going to say an idiot because he's actually a very good man. But this is an idiot move. This is an idiot move to fire Craig Berube, the guy who brought a Stanley Cup to St. Louis for the first time, a guy who was one of those amazing personalities, great coach. He's one game under 500 and you let him go. I mean, There's something else behind it. Chief is going to get another job very, very soon.
No doubt.
I mean, he's not going to be long. When he decides he wants a job, Chief is going to get a job anywhere in the league. That's the type of person he is, and how good of a hockey guy that he is. But I, you know, back in the Chicago days, I took a run at Hextall one night, and it was a wrong move because Paul Holmgren sent Chief out to get me, and he chased me around, and we had this big melee on the ice, and the referee had Chief all wrapped up, you know, both arms, and I did the unwritten rule, and I slugged him so hard with the referee holding him, and for like the next 4 years, he was just chasing me around. Every time I jump on the ice, he'd yell for somebody to get off so he can get on. He'd chase me to the bench, and I eluded him for 4 years. He wanted to beat the crap out of me for 4 years, and then I'd sign in Philly, and then all of a sudden, I see one day you know, the Phantom signed Craig Berube to player coach contract. I'm like, oh, okay, this is, and, you know, and you know, and you guys know, you know, the Phantoms were in the same building, practice facility, but just one, you know, one rank over. And Chief can go anywhere. So I'm taping my stick in the locker room, and one morning, and here comes Craig into the locker room. And again, he's with the Phantoms, but he was part of the Flyers. He walked in the locker room. I'm like, hey, Chief, what's going on? Hey, JR, how you doing today? Bap! Just a little punch right to the mouth. And I just remember just seeing a couple stars, and that my mouth hurt. And he's like, I told you I'd get you back. And I'm like, if that's not vintage Craig Berube, I don't know what is. We actually went and played golf and drank beers together that same day.
That day.
Oh, no way. Awesome. That's awesome. So cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I love him.
So quickly, your time with the Kings there, I was coming off the lockout year, if I'm not mistaken. Were you disappointed that you got traded to the Kings, or was it time, or?
You know, everybody asked me if I can go back in time and make different decisions about my career, what I would do. I go back to 96 with the Hawks and my relationship with Mr. Wirtz. I would have changed that mentality. The other thing I would have changed is in 2005, after the lockout, Bobby Clark called me and had a heart-to-heart with me. He's like, listen, JR, you know, we have an opportunity to get Peter Forsberg here, but we can't have both of you on the team salary-wise. And, you know, would be acceptable if we sent you to another team, if it'd be okay, you know, to lift your no trade. And I'm sitting there saying, listen, I'm a huge Peter Forsberg fan. He's one of the best players I ever played against. I'm like, listen, this team has the opportunity to get Peter Forsberg on it, which was an amazing, I think, mentality for me. My family was living on the West Coast. I said, you know what, Clarky, if you send me to these teams, you know, in this area, I'll accept a trade reluctantly, but you guys get to get Forsberg. You know, you're getting a better player than I was at that time, or at least that's what I thought. But so I accepted the trade, and I lifted my no trade clause. If I could go back now to 2005, I would tell Clarky, you know, sorry, Clarky, see you tomorrow. I'm not getting traded. I'm not getting traded anywhere. No, I'm staying right here. I'm not lifting my no trade. I'm staying in Philly the rest of my career, and we're going to finish it at that. That's what I need to do. But it turned out the way it did, and, you know, I ended up finishing two amazing years in San Jose.
Yeah.
With one of the best teams I've ever been a part of. I got to be teammates with Joe Thornton, who is bar none the greatest human being athlete that I've ever seen in my life. But, you know, shit happens, you know, and
yeah,
you can't look back and be sad. You got to look back and learn.
Yes, sir. Right. I read a great article a while back about you talking about going to San Jose and basically in a sense, you're saving your life. Doug Wilson. I thought that was really, really cool. You told that story.
Yeah. And it's one that I tell very carefully, because a lot of people won't understand it and won't understand where I was in my head and in my career at that time. Just came off of I thought was going to be a great year in Arizona. Arizona really just signed me to sell tickets, not really to play me. I was in great shape in 2006, 2007, but I had a shit year with Gretz in Arizona. Not Gretz's fault, but still, it was just not nice. Finished year 4 goals shy of 500.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it's July 1 comes, free agency time. You know, your phone doesn't ring for a month and a half. You know, you go down a deep slide. I thought my career was over in 2007, in that summer. And, you know, you dive into a depression. And I did. I dove into a severe depression, you know, abusing booze and just, you know, not taking care of myself. And, you know, it was really a dark, really dark dive at a end of a great career. To have it finish like that, 4 goals shy of 500, was really hard for me. And then Doug called out of nowhere, you know, and asked me to come into San Jose to see him. I said, sure. And I was actually had a drink in my hand when he called me. And, you know, I was probably 30 pounds overweight in August at that time. And so I went in and he picked me up, went to the golf course, and we just started, we started chatting. And he said, well, he says, how would you like to come play for San Jose? And I'm like, really? He's like, yeah, it's, I would love to. He gave me three rules. Three rules. This is number one, you have to play for the minimum, which is $500,000, which I didn't care about. It wasn't about the money. He said, number two, no media. You can't do any media unless we ask you to do something, but you can't just talk to the media to talk to the media. Just be a good teammate, be good to the young guy, be a good role model. And the last one was no drinking the entire year. You can no booze the entire year. And I actually had a beer in my hand in the golf course. And, you know, I looked at him, I dumped the beer out right in front of him and I shook his hand. And I said, deal.
Nice. Wow.
And I didn't have one drink that entire first year in San Jose, you know, scored my 500th goal, had a good year, scored like 17 goals and like 35, 40 points that year. And, you know, then signed for 1.2 the next year and had another good year until I got hurt in December. So I blew my shoulder out, but, you know, Doug Wilson and San Jose Sharks really saved my life. There's no question about it.
Wow. That's amazing.
Both professionally and personally. And, you know, that those are things that you can never repay. There's no question. So that's a huge part of my heart is San Jose.
Yeah. That's amazing.
Riley does a lot of, in the space of former athletes, being depressed and everyone thinks that, oh, it's just all glamour. And they don't understand that you guys as athletes are real people and have real struggles and they don't see it. And it's so nice to hear. When I read that, I remember thinking, wow, like obviously I didn't know that. So it made me feel good. And Riley does a lot.
Not many people do. And, you know, there's certain things that you want that you think about, right? So I've always dreamed about, you know, doing a Hall of Fame speech and certain people that you recognize. And, you know, I always wanted to tell that story in a situation like that. Don't think I'll ever have that opportunity to, which is why I'm a little bit more open to talking about it these days. So, but it's something that I think it's an important part of my life. And, you know, I want to make sure that people understand, you know, how important Doug Wilson was for me, how important the San Jose Sharks for me. And because that can somebody else is going to have that same situation and somebody else is going to get saved the way that I did.
Yeah. I do have to add is that you got to take some ownership in it too, right? I mean, you get an opportunity to save yourself, but you're the one that decided that you were going to take that opportunity and make some change, right? Because I think a lot of people get stuck in the victim mentality where you can have an opportunity presented to yourself, but unless you're willing to make change and like own it, you know, you're always going to be a victim. And, you know, these opportunities might just go by the wayside. So, you know, props to you, man, you know, like you poured the bureau.
Coach, well said. You just helped a lot of people right there with what you just said. That's well said. It's awesome.
Yeah. So I see that because I work with a lot of people dealing with similar versions of, you know, their own issues in life. And I think once they get past the, you know, like I'm responsible for my reality and I can control it and I can change it, you know, based on my thinking and behaviors, you know, things change pretty quickly. So I got to recognize that in you, man, because it's, you know, you had an opportunity, someone helped you save your life, but I mean, you ultimately did.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. And good for you. So yeah. It's a tough one, especially at that time of your career too, right? You could easily slip away and
absolutely. Yep.
Yeah. So
yeah, definitely. Well said. Well said, buddy.
JR, everybody knows you're a good golfer, and love to golf. I have to ask you, and I've heard the story, but you've played golf with Michael Jordan, man.
I know, but dude,
you know, I'm a basketball guy and just, I saw a story, obviously, you don't have to get all into it, but like playing with him, I think it was during the playoffs. Was it not? He was in the playoffs?
No, it was right before the playoffs. We had about four before the playoffs. Jordan and the Bulls were playing one more game. They were playing game 82. That meant absolutely nothing. You know, Michael and I played 36. We crushed kids of beer together. He scores 56 and they win by 24. It's like, you know, I beat him on the golf course, but he beat me because he predicted what they would win by. I said he was full of shit.
Yeah, that's right.
I will say this. Michael Jordan is without a doubt the most fierce competitor that I've ever seen in my life as an athlete. One of the most talented people, one of the most headstrong, mentally strong people ever. Being around him helped me a lot with how I thought the game, and I wasn't around him a lot. I'm not saying we were like best buddies. We weren't, but I was around him enough to see it, you know, and understand it. Yeah.
Now, wow. I do have another question real quickly about golf. That you played with Charles Barkley, who's a big hockey fan, obviously.
Yep.
But is it hard to play when he's got that, when he's swinging? Like, Riles, you have a better swing than Barks does, than Charles.
Yeah, I really know that.
You do.
Charles is, just, first of all, I don't think there's a superstar in any sport that treats people and treats their fans the way that Charles does. He's just an absolutely beauty of a person and a man, and, you know, represents, you know, himself extremely, extremely well to the fans. And he lives his life the way I like to live my life, is being honest and telling it how it is.
Yep.
And his golf game was awful, and was awful watching it. I tried to fix him. I tried to fix him all the time, and every time I tried to fix him, it got worse. But he's actually gotten out of that hitch. He's now out of that mentality. But for the longest time, I think he hit somebody at Lake Tahoe one year, and literally hurt them pretty bad. And he has that mental block in his head now that, if he hits a bad one, he can hurt somebody. That's how Charles thinks. That's how he thinks. Like, he thinks about other people, man. He thinks about that stuff. And you got to commend him for having a mental block, because something bad, I think, happened. But I'm glad he's out of it. He loves golf. He loves hockey. He's a beautiful man. He's a great friend. And he actually tried to play one-handed. He played lefty. He did everything he possibly could. But now he's playing pretty good.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I love Charles Barkley. I watch them, you know, on TNT, and he's one of my favorites. One of my favorites. So, I could probably talk to you for about 5 hours. I know you don't have the time, but we appreciate you, man, JR, for joining us. I know you're a busy man, taking the time for us. We really do appreciate you, man. Well, and
you guys are both beauties. You guys are both beauties. You know, Derek, you and I go back a long way, and Coach, obviously we battled back in the day, and I respect your career and what you did. So it's always nice to catch up, and, you know, just make sure you check me out on nofilter.net every Wednesday at 7:00. Snipes and Stripes with me and Timmy Peel. We'll keep everybody entertained after you guys finish your show. So
you right? got
whiskey,
it, man.
Whiskey in the Wild, whiskeyinthewild.com. Check out the best chocolate whiskey you ever had in your life. It makes for a great gift. So
those there are
my two shameless plugs.
Oh, no.
Awesome. Well, thank you. It's too bad you're not going to be joining us for the Flyers alumni game versus Boston end of January.
Yeah.
It would have been nice to see you out there.
I was trying to make that happen, but unfortunately my schedule is too crazy. But I'll get you guys down the road a little bit.
Absolutely.
All right, brother. Thank you so much.
Hey, brother. Big thank you to our friend JR.
Styles.
Oh yeah.
This guy's got it all, man.
He's a full package.
Dude, we talked about it, but he was so good to everyone on the staff, Phantom, even Phantom guy. Like, he always came down, just, you know, kind of touched on that with him. But aren't many people that don't like JR and what he does. And one of the things I loved about him, one, is obviously an awesome player. He was a reckless player for such a skilled guy. I know we talked about that, but, man, he said what he wanted.
Yeah.
Like, he didn't hold back. And
appreciate that.
You know, and I think the only, like we said, the only fan base maybe that doesn't like him but does is Toronto, from that big goal in 94. But great guy, man.
Yeah.
Thank him so much. And glad that their podcast is doing well, him and Timmy Peel. So,
yeah.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, the game certainly could use a little more personality.
Sure could.
Yeah. No appreciate one. That, you know, because he was one of the first guys to kind of really –
No one turned their TVs off.
That's right. You know, yeah.
Or didn't read what he was saying, watching him. So
yeah,
great guy. Great guy. Yeah,
appreciate you coming on.
Yep.
JR. It's that time, Nas.
Is it that time?
Again.
I think it's time for clear questions.
Oh, yeah. Look at this little lineup here.
Brought to you by clearum.com/shop. Use code NASTY2023. You get 35% off NPA. Riggs, I've got it right here in NJ.
Whew.
And you see the rainbow.
That is colorful.
It is, and it's delish.
Delicioso. I can see that you might have drank all the cucumber ones.
I choked them down because you didn't think I'd do it. I shouldn't even say choked them because it was actually good. I put a little mixer in there, and it was pretty damn good. But now I got the rainbow going, and every one of those are my favorite, and I'm not kidding. That is some smooth.
Probably safe to say they'll be gone by next week?
By tomorrow, Friday.
By tomorrow,
Friday, Saturday, we'll need a new stash.
Yeah. get the guys to send another batch here.
Yeah, don't mind us. I'm just shotgunning them.
NASA's got a slight problem.
The clears. It goes way past clears.
It's way deeper than that.
Baller, what do you got?
Starting us off over on Instagram, we got Kara Davenport. Kara wants to know, why does Carter Hart keep getting sick? He's stressing me out.
What do you got, Nas?
You know what I was going to say? I'm not going to say it because it'll piss people off. It'll make some people happy, piss some people off. But I don't know why he's getting sick.
BioSteel, lactose intolerant?
Well, that was one of the issues where he thought he was lactose intolerant. I think
that was resolved last year.
Yeah, but we got that one resolved. But all seriousness, he seemed to have found the issue from what he said, and hopefully he's going to be feeling better soon. Can't really give you – I'm not a – you didn't know this, but I did stay at a Holiday Inn Select last night, but I'm not a doctor. I'm not today.
You look like one.
I can sometimes with my glasses. I put Elvie's got a doctor's coat that I can barely almost wear now because he's getting so damn big. But I don't know exactly why. Maybe they do now. It'll come out later. Out. Yeah, but I don't want to give out any information.
Yeah, so hope he gets better and gets back to where he needs to be.
It's a good question, though. I think everyone wants to know
sure
that.
I'm sure everybody's curious.
Philadelphia Flyagram over on Instagram would like to know, do you guys both have your championship rings from the Phantoms? Next season is the 20th anniversary of the 04-05 win.
Wow, 20 years. How old do we feel right now? I don't know if Riggs has his, but... That I didn't know if you meant... Oh, wait. I didn't know if you meant the 98 or the Olympic Silvesy or that one.
You got it all.
Where's yours? You don't rock
yours? No, I have mine. Don't have it with me. No. Don't have it with me, but I do have it.
Yeah, no, I normally don't wear mine, but I keep them down in the displayed.
I wonder if we should fire up a big reunion. What do you think?
Well, we just had the 25th for the 98 team, but I think we need a 20th.
Is it a 20th?
Imagine that crew. If we got that crew together, oh, my God, it'd be just dangerous. As good as this summer's. Last summer with the other Phantom group. It was
awesome.
That'd
be something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yes, I still have it.
Definitely still got it.
Still have it.
Mm-hmm.
We got one final one from Brandon McComsey over on Instagram. He wants to know, Nasty, during your time with the Flyers, can you rank your top five favorite jerseys?
Ooh.
That's a good question.
Brandon, we met at Xfinity, right, Baller? Yeah, Brandon. What's up, bro? My top five favorites is the black one we're wearing now that we unveiled back in, 17 in Pittsburgh, the stadium series. I think it was 17, right, Baller? That's my favorite Flyers jersey. I didn't really like the orange with the silver in them.
Okay.
In that logo. I wasn't a fan of those. You wore that your first year. It might have been one of your first games you wore that one, 33. Let's see. I like the white ones that we wore your full first season when Reebok came in.
Oh, yeah. They were tighter, but I really like
the way they looked, actually. And I guess the next one would be that black as well that we wore that year. So that's 1, 2, 3. I don't mind this year's. I really don't mind.
Yeah, I agree.
I actually like the orange. I know you're going to be surprised, but it's not orange.
Well, it's because it's closer to the original rustic.
And I think the fifth one I'll go with is the last year's white. That I don't know if you want to call that a retro. Was that a retro Do they call that a retro baller? Yeah, the white one.
Yeah.
I really like that jersey as well.
That's like my top five. Yeah, it's nice. Couldn't remember all those jerseys, but you did. So.
You got punched in the head a couple times.
I did, yeah. Don't have the memory you do.
Wow. Clearly. I think I'm losing a little bit every day.
You think
day.
So?
Yeah. Okay, when you deal with Donald on a daily basis, old Dougaroo, who's in studio today, nice along with the other 50 people. That's what I got to say about that.
All right. Well, that's a wrap, Nast.
That's it?
139 in the books.
139. We're 140, Debo, next week. Can you believe it?
Crazy.
Another one-word answer from Debo. Yeah. It's crazy.
Well,
I love it.
Wish you all happy holidays. Yes. Be sure to tune in next week after big Christmas Day. Be sure to subscribe, like, comment, clear questions. And until then, stay safe, knuckleheads.
See ya.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien Podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish, but you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast, so everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.